Thank you very much, Claire. Ahiahi pai, no mai, haere mai, ko Karen Hay, tēnei. Good afternoon, welcome. I'm Karen Hay. I'm here for Wallace Chapman on the panel this week. And I hope those of you outside of Auckland have been enjoying your newfound freedom. I can't speak for everyone, but I think we're okay. Thanks for asking. Coming up in August, a major UN scientific report gave humanity a code red regarding climate change and stated that human activity is changing the climate in unprecedented and sometimes irreversible ways. Well, a recent international poll says that New Zealanders do want action on climate change, but just not as much as people in other countries. Is that an accurate assessment of our collective response? And on that subject, in the UK, touring bans have been given a roadmap as to how they can help reverse climate change, and that includes not flying anywhere. Well, given our geography, how's that going to affect the entertainment industry? International touring acts might just be a thing of the past. What about insurance for events that have been disrupted by COVID? Should the government get involved with funding a scheme like this? Meanwhile, in Afghanistan, a supposedly temporary government has been appointed by the Taliban, but there are no women, and the men are all hardline Taliban veterans. Can the international community exert any pressure at all as to what happens in Afghanistan now? And do I look okay? Let's call it Zoom face vanity. Beauty and wellness companies are cashing in as video calling makes people far more self-conscious about their looks. And of course, the cameras on our phones and laptops and computers are pretty harsh, so it's understandable. And those with drug and alcohol addictions are waiting up to 2 years for treatment in the South Island. So those are the topics we'll be addressing today. And our panellists are Alan Blackman, Professor of Chemistry at AUT. Kia ora, Alan.
Hi, Karen. How are you?
Not too bad. Come closer so we can see you. There he is. And Amy Adams, former National Party Minister. Kia ora.
Kia ora. How are you?
Good. Where am I speaking to you?
I am in sunny West Melton, or sunny now. It was snowing earlier, but just out of Christchurch.
Fabulous. Alan Blackman and Amy Adams will be our panellists, and let us know what you think about today's stories. Good to hear your views and your perspectives on the stories of the day. The text is 2101, or the email is thepanel@rnz.co.nz. It's now 9 minutes past four. And while we're all very concerned with the lockdown levels at the moment and the community spread of Delta, meanwhile, the world outside our borders goes on. In the UK, scientists at the University of Manchester have made some recommendations to help the music industry there reduce its carbon emissions to stop climate change. And this roadmap for live music was based on tour data that was given to them by the band Massive Attack. And they came up with these recommendations for super low carbon practices with how musicians, promoters, tour managers and agents should work in order to keep the rise in global warming restricted to 1.5 degrees Celsius. And they included artists and bands swapping private jets for trains, festivals and venues needing to generate more of their own renewable energy, and gig ticket prices, including free public transport. So if bands do follow these guidelines, the question is how many of the big bands will rethink their touring plans to Australasia? Joining us now is promoter for the Frontier Touring Company, Brent Eccles. Kia ora, Brent.
Kia ora, how are you?
Hey, as a touring company, you must be a bit worried about this.
No, not really. I think lots of people like to come to New Zealand. Well, it's really Australasia, and if they do it right, it's one international flight to Auckland, one international flight to Sydney, and then they just move around. I think the disadvantage for New Zealand would be that you'd probably be a one-city tour. You'd just probably come to Auckland or Christchurch or Wellington and not tour the city, but not tour the country. And in Australia, see, in Europe and in the UK and North America, they have tour buses where they're decked out for people to travel, and they don't have those in Australia, so their model there is flying. So they could change that, but it would mean spending more time in the market and balancing up the cost and the resources they use to do that.
Brenda, do you think it's possible to make a big stadium gig, you know, by the likes of somebody like U2 or whomever, a green gig? Their lighting rigs, for example, they're huge and they're often part of the attraction of the show itself.
Yeah, well, nowadays a lot of the lighting is LED, so it takes less power. Most of the power would be in the PA system, and that's often driven by diesel generators. I guess you could run solar if you had big enough batteries. Maybe we should get Tesla involved. I'm sure it's possible, but it takes a lot of planning, and it's always good to have a plan.
And if you offer them enough money, do you think that any concern about climate change might go out the window?
Offer the artists enough money?
Yes.
Yeah, well, there's that, isn't there? But look, I think people are generally pretty responsible. You know, some tour parties have greater needs than others, but maybe it'll weed out the ones that we really care about the planet, we want to see, and it'll be a return to the hippie days, you know, where people cared about things.
The hippie days indeed. What do you reckon, Alan, in the interests of slowing down climate change, would you be prepared to forego international artists coming here? Are you there, Alan?
Oh, shoot, sorry, you're talking to me.
Come closer to the camera.
Yeah.
In the interest...
I know, we're just sorting things out here. I really wouldn't like to contemplate a future where no bands came here. I think that'd be really, really sad. My question on all of this is, how do they get the gig following Massive Attack around? I think that'd be a great job for an academic, you know, so I want some of what they've got. But... yeah, I mean, ultimately, how much of a carbon footprint are touring bands making? I mean, you know, in the grand scheme of things, is them, you know, or stopping flying their private jets and stuff like that, is that going to make a big difference to, you know, climate change? I don't know the answer to that, but I would guess that there's probably a lot more things that we could be doing before that. Before we start sort of talking about touring bands and stuff.
Amy, they can hardly come by ship, but perhaps they might.
Yeah, no, there's no way to get around the fact that we are the last bus stop on the planet. But, you know, I think the comment was right, that you've got to think about it as Australia and New Zealand, really. When you're down this part of the world, it's you know, it's really the two countries you're dealing with. Reading through that report, though, the interesting thing was there's a heck of a lot involved in it that wasn't just about the artists flying. And one thing that always occurs to me is when you look at them, they bring an enormous amount of gear and roadies and sort of support with them. Maybe we can do more of that domestically and just have the talent themselves flying in and use a lot more local backup for the touring acts. And that would kill two birds with one stone, I guess, reduce the footprint and create a bit more local economic activity. So there's probably a lot they can take from this to improve before we get to the do not pass go, do not collect $100 thing of ending the visits out here, I would hope.
That's good news, Brent. Hey, Brent, thank you very much.
Okay, cheers, bye.
That's Brent Eccles. It's 4:04. And Alan, what else have you been thinking about recently?
What with our pandemic and all of these terrible things that are happening in the world at the moment, I hate to be a downer, but I'm going to talk about nuclear weapons, which people have probably sort of forgotten about, really, just because of all of the terrible things that are going on. So we're just talking about climate change. We've got terrorism. We've got this pandemic. We've got so many things that are, you know, wrong with the world. But I guess what I certainly have forgotten, and probably a lot of people at the moment anyway, is the fact that we've still got 14,000 nuclear weapons on planet Earth, and we are only one computer glitch away from, you know, absolute annihilation. We've been lucky so far. In 1983, there was a guy by the name of Stanislav Petrov. He was a Russian military guy, and he was monitoring his computer for possible US missile launches. He saw what the computer said were 5 missiles coming his way, and he had to make the choice as to whether to hit the button or not. Thank goodness he didn't, because this was the sun apparently shining on a cloud and being misinterpreted by the satellites or whatever. We were extremely lucky then. We were very lucky in 1995, a similar sort of thing apparently. Boris Yeltsin had to figure out whether he was going to press the button or not, because again, it was thought that there was an attack on the way. It's crazy. This is the only planet we know that supports life. It's madness that we've got 14,000 nuclear weapons on it. 90% of them are owned by the US and Russia. The rest of the world should be putting pressure on these two countries, plus the rest of the nuclear mob, and saying, no, bugger it, we don't want this. This is not in our best interests. And you know, if all of this does go bad, then all of our worries about climate change, et cetera, are going to be moot anyway. I think this is a really, really important thing. And, one that's getting lost, I think, in all of the other bad things that are going on.
You're right. That was a bit of a downer, but...
Sorry.
Amy Adams.
Well, I'm going to try and be a little bit more upbeat. Not that that's not important, Alan, but I've just been thinking about one of the best things for me this lockdown has been the chance to sit home and watch the Paralympics. I've never really got a chance to sort of sit and watch them. I love the Olympics. I'm a big sports fan, watching sports, but I've never spent so much time watching the Paralympics. And I've got to say, I was just blown away with what people achieve and the obstacles they overcome. And if you've ever felt a bit down about yourself or your lot in life or, you know, your limitations, man, you watch a bit of that and you just think, there is no limit. There is literally no limit on what we can do as human beings. And I just found it the most inspiring. And obviously there were some incredible New Zealand performances, but right across the board, I mean, the one that sticks in my mind was watching a guy play table tennis with his feet holding the paddle.
Got to interrupt you there. Very uplifting. Back after the news.